When I was in Perth recently, I met one of the winemakers in the Swan Valley, which I think is one of Perth's best kept, maybe WA's best kept secrets, but it is some of the oldest wineries in Australia are in this region. And I met James Taliancic, whose family have been there for quite a while. Welcome to Travel Writers Radio, James.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you make a particular style of wine that you're very comfortable with there in the Swan Valley. Tell us the family history of winemaking for your family.
Well, from both sides of the family, Graham, we, from my mother's side and my father's side, came out from the old Yugoslavia, which is now Croatia, in the mid-1920s, 26 through to 1929. My grandfather passed away quite young, unfortunately, and so my father was only 13, and he left high school, was forced to leave high school and work with his mother on the vineyard, and that's when it all started for us.
Okay, and what size vineyard have you got there, James? Is that the original holding that I saw? Or?
Yeah, what you saw that day is about 15 acres, so we really are quite small.
Right. But you make a fortified wine is your sort of hero product there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that my grandfather did a bit of, and my father's time, of course, it was right throughout Australia. I think 80-odd percent of production was fortified wine, believe it or not. It's hard to see it now. But and it's almost gone a full circle, funnily enough. We're table wines are really important for us, like our Verdello and Shiraz, but we've sort of decided, or it's sort of happened in a very natural way, and that is we've almost gone back to entirely making fortified wine, which sort of goes against the grain a little bit.
Yeah, look, I did notice when I was over there that there were some comments about Swan Valley feeling a little bit like a poor cousin to Margaret River, but most of the people who inhabited Margaret River came from Swan Valley, didn't they?
Some did. Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's many wineries in the Swan, a bit like other regions of Australia, where they may not just make their wines from that region where the winery is located or where their cellador is located. And the Swan Valley's a bit like that. There's a mixture of wineries like us that where it's 100% Swan Valley fruit, and a number of other wineries make a Margaret River range or a Great Southern range as well as their Swan Valley range of wines. And it works really well. Mm. I don't think anyone has any problems with it.
Yeah, and Hortons and Sandalford are some of the big names in
yes.
Swan Valley. But beyond them, there are a lot of families like yours that occupy smaller land holdings but produce some excellent wines.
Yeah, well, it's taken, I mean, when you think, goodness, it's my 40th year this year. It's hard to believe, but it's my 40th vintage that was just being completed. And we went through a really tough time in the Swan. I have to be honest with you. It was probably happened 30-odd years ago. Margaret River had already started, but was, and also the Great Southern, and was developing a really strong reputation. And certainly well-deserved, too. And we were really caught on the back foot a little. People like John Kosovich and Horton and then ourselves started to make, you know, Chenin Blanc and Verdello and Shiraz. But that wasn't really until the early 70s and slightly later. So it was a really, really difficult period, and there was very little investment in the region. And then all of a sudden, around about the 90s, and probably late 90s, people found this growing interest and love for the region. They wanted to make wines from a warmer Mediterranean climate, a bit like areas of Spain and other areas of the eastern states, like the Barossa and sort of northeast Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Where the conditions are slightly warmer rather than cooler climate. And I can't really say the region's better than any other region or vice versa. I think it's more of a... it's just more important, I think, to really focus on what the regions do well. And that seems to be winemakers' goals these days.
It does. And what's interesting about the Swan Valley, for people who might like to go and visit it, is you can basically drive around it in sort of half a day or maybe even less. It's a 30-odd kilometre loop, isn't it, from the city around the main roads where the wineries and other parts of the industry are located.
Yeah, it's like literally the start of the Swan, which is the gateway, which is Guildford, would probably be no more than 20 minutes from the centre of the city. So you could travel the world and not... I think there's probably only one other region that might be a similar distance.
Maybe in Adelaide.
A sort of proximity to a capital city. So
yeah.
So we're very lucky. We're very fortunate. And now it's made up of a whole range of industries that just seem to be intertwined with grape growing, winemaking, food production, also accommodation. There's a few more hotels going up. Of course, places like the Vines Resort that's been there for almost 30 years now. So, but a lot of family businesses.
Yeah.
Mainly focused around food and wine.
Well, there's a very big investment by one Croatian family over there.
Yes, the Ursek family, yes.
Yeah, Mandun Estate, which I think someone said they spent about $40 million.
That's about right. They're the numbers that I've heard.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I know Alan, and he needs to be congratulated, and I'm sure he has been many times. It's so nice to see that, because quite often these sorts of investments over the last 30 years have been reserved for cooler parts of Australia, where there's been probably more focus. When Cabernet and Chardonnay and Rieslings and Semillons and Sauvignon Blancs and Pinots became more popular, but particularly Chardonnay and Cabernet, there was more focus during the 80s and 90s on some of the cooler climates. And I think generally they do produce some of the best Chardonnays and Cabernets and a number of other varieties. But it's just nice to see that he really had the confidence and the foresight to know that with tourism numbers increasing through the Swan because of our proximity to Perth, he thought this is really the place to be. And so he has a brewery, a winery, two restaurants, also accommodation, quite a large vineyard, outdoor area, and then also a large reception area which holds 350 people. So it's a really significant investment for him and going very well.
Yeah, well, I happened to stay there and also ate at the degustation restaurant, which it was terrific, I have to say. The other thing that I found fascinating, he's got the Swan River at his back door.
Yes, he does.
He's also bought some of the original landholding of the Surveyor General, which was given to the Surveyor General by Queen Victoria. I think he might have suggested it to her. And some of the original vines, I think, are still
they
there.
Go back. I know we have some going back to 1926 and 1932, and his go back a little bit before that time. So, yeah, some of the oldest vines in the state.
Yeah.
And they really do produce, from a winemaking perspective, they don't always, but generally speaking, when a vineyard is well suited to that particular site, and the decades have gone on, and you can see through those decades that the wines are continually improving, then you know you've got something really special. And so old vine Shiraz and old vine Verdello, old vine Grenache exists, and also Chenin Blanc in the Swan Valley, and you really have to treasure them because, and even history tells us right throughout Europe where there's old traditional vineyards on these sites, they hold specific qualities and characteristics for wine that is really quite special and unique. And as a winemaker, you really grab a hold of it when you can.
Yeah. Now, you were telling me, you took me into the inner sanctum there and you drew, using the wine thief, you drew some wine out of a barrel and you started telling me the story about this wine you almost didn't make. You almost threw the grapes away.
Yes,
tell us about that.
Yes. Yes, that was from the Rowe family property, whose name you mentioned just a short time ago. A piece of land, about 130 acres, which is quite large for the Swan, right beside Horton's property. It was all part of Horton. And Dr. Ferguson had that subdivided. And they were planted in 1899 through to 1901. And my father purchased the fruit for about 51 years. But in 2007, I saw the fruit about a week and a half before, and I knew it was really close. And we had 4 days of 40-odd degrees, which we just don't get anymore. Mm. We probably did years ago. And I went there about a week and a half later. We couldn't get pickers there at the time because we were getting some of our fruit off, and I walked through the vineyard, and I was just devastated. Green stalks had become brittle, almost like a bunch of dried raisins.
Really?
So, to make a long story short, we actually picked the raisins off. A 25-kilo bucket weighed about 6 kilos.
Oh, right.
I remember bringing it back to the winery. My father really didn't have a lot of good things to say about bringing something like that into the winery, because right. It's almost impossible to process.
Yeah.
In fact, if it was up to me, I probably wouldn't have harvested the fruit.
Right.
It was Tony Rowe, the late John Rowe's son, who lives on the property, who convinced me. And we couldn't process it. We just set up sort of droplets of rainwater for about 2 weeks over this raisin fruit to be able to almost rehydrate it. So we were able to put it through a crusher destemmer. And then soaked it on skins for quite a while. But what came out the press was just something quite amazing. I think the fruit was 34.5 Bome, which is quite high.
Pretty high,
by anyone's standards. And the finished wine ended up being like 27 or 28. And it's a very short fermentation and then fortified with old brandy. But ended up being one of our... probably our best single vintage over an 85-year period.
And it went to London?
It went to London, yes. Previous to that, we had won gold with a couple of other liqueurs, like our rare Tawny and the rare Pedro Ximenez from 74. But we entered this one just 2 years ago, and it won outstanding gold, which put it up there in the top fortified wines of the world.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it was really... a significant achievement for such a small winery, and the results like that, I think, really sort of help to keep you inspired. It can be a difficult industry at times, and it takes a great deal of work. And those winemakers out there understand what I'm saying. It's you need to be, continually focused on the end product, which is the best possible wine you can make. And that's not always easy. And it takes, of course, generations of experience.
Mm.
So I was lucky that I had my father's experience from a young guy when I first started, and my grandfather's experience. And I think that was an enormous help for me in my 20s and 30s. If it wasn't for that, then it would have been almost impossible, because... fortified wine's a bit like making French champagne, I think, or great sparklings, even in the eastern states. There are many great sparklings that are made around Australia. They're the sort of styles that take a few generations to get a handle on, because they're very complex in their production methods. And, of course, they're normally blended. This is a straight vintage, but they're normally blended to make them better. So, right. So it was really nice to be able to put this wine out there and on a world stage and see the response from judges, and it was really quite something.
Yeah. Well, you are a big man and a very humble one from my short experience of spending a little bit of time with you, and I do congratulate you on that result. But I gather that the millennials have got onto this PX, as they call it, and they're buying it quite readily from you. Have you got much left?
Unfortunately, it's a wine that sells for $250 a half bottle, and it's really really pleasing that it does sell at that price. And I'm not sure what price it should sell for, because it's really difficult to put a number on it.
Tasted good to me, James. I couldn't value it either. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, and I think, for example, from that picking, we would normally get somewhere in the region of 3,000 to 4,000 litres of juice.
Right.
And I think that year we got about 900.
Right.
So we don't have much left. I think it's probably another 12 months or so through cellar door, and a few restaurants here in the west sell it. But really most of the sales are through either mail order or through cellar door, which goes really well. It's so nice to see people come in and hear the story and to really appreciate them.
That was James Taliuncic. James has a winery in his own name. And if you want to look it up, Taliuncich. It's in the Swan Valley, just outside Perth. And if you want to get some of that Pedro's Jimenez, I tried it. It's fantastic. I don't know if I could afford $250, half a bottle.
It's a bit pricey, isn't it?
It is not cheap. But as he says, they normally get, 4,000 litres and they got 900. And he still paid for the crop. So anyway, if it's the best wine in London, it's probably pretty good on a global scale. So that was James Taliuncich.